Welcome to the Outcomes Rocket Podcast,
where we inspire collaborative thinking, improved outcomes, and business success with today's most successful and inspiring healthcare leaders and influencers.
And now your host,
Saul Marquez.
Welcome back to the Outcomes Rocket. Saul Marquez is here, and today I have the privilege of hosting Sanji Fernando. He's a senior vice president at Optum, where he leads the artificial intelligence and analytics platforms team. He's responsible for developing platforms that support the design and development of leading-edge AI models and analytic tools for the enterprise. Previously, Sanji was vice president at Optum Labs and led the Optum Labs Center for Applied Data Science, which is called CADS. The CADS team applied breakthroughs in AI and machine learning to solve complex healthcare challenges for United Health Groups, and by developing and deploying software product concepts. CADS pioneered using deep learning to streamline administrative processes in revenue cycle management and developed graph analytics tools to support provider network design, among other innovations that they've done. He's been at Optum Labs since 2014 from Nokia, where he created Nokia's first data science team. So definitely no rookie to data science and AI. Before that, he spent those 9 years there and just has done an incredible amount of work as well as starting his own business. So it's a true privilege to have Sanji on the podcast here and excited to cover his insights in healthcare and AI. So Sanji, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thanks so much, Saul. That was very gracious. I'm looking forward to our conversation.
Likewise. So, Sanji, what inspires your work in healthcare? Because at the beginning, you weren't in healthcare, right? You're a technology guy that gravitated to healthcare.
Yeah. You know, I was in telecom and I worked in internet companies way back when. And I really had an affinity to technology, studied computer science in college. And what brought me back to healthcare maybe was growing up in the healthcare family, really. Both my parents were physicians. I had a great exposure to them. They were primary care physicians in Connecticut and saw their day-to-day work, saw the lives they touched. And while I didn't pursue that as a career, I understood maybe almost subconsciously that it was something that was very satisfying. And now I've got a wife and three kids, and you know, healthcare touches us all. And so my hope is that by understanding and pursuing some pretty advanced technologies over my career, I could bring that back to healthcare a little bit and see if we can make some significant changes in how we use technology to enable healthcare in the U.S. and even abroad.
I think that's great, Sanji. And so it's that story, you know, your parents grew up as physicians. And when you took that left turn, Sanji, what did they think? I mean, did they say, our son's not going to be a doctor? Or were they happy that you became an IT guy?
I think they were always supportive. I mean, from the age of like 8 or 9, they were spending way too much money buying us computers and gaming consoles. And I think they knew that was something I was passionate about. And there were times where you want to follow your parents' footsteps. Being a physician is an incredibly honorable profession, incredibly stable profession. And, you know, I made it an effort to get through organic chemistry in college. And after that, I said, you know, I think I want to do something I'm really a little bit more excited about.
Yeah, no, I can appreciate that. So it sounds like you were kind of drawn in by technology at a very young age, gave it a swing, but said, I'm going to follow my passion, mom and dad.
Yeah, and they were supportive all the way. So
that's awesome, man.
An important lesson for us all. Yeah.
No, especially as parents now. I mean, so, hey, kudos to you, mom and dad. Sanji's doing pretty good now. What makes what you guys do there at Optum different, and how is it adding value to the ecosystem of the business and of your customers?
Yeah, my focus is AI, and Optum is, it's such a multifaceted business. We touch so many portions of the healthcare system, from patients to providers to governments to employers to pharmaceutical companies. And that gives us this great opportunity to take a look, maybe more holistically, at how we can really drive and deliver better outcomes and change in the healthcare system. Specifically, in my focus area, we've got a wealth of data across our enterprise, over 220 million de-identified patient lives of data. That gives us this great perspective on how we could take some of these new, often referred to as artificial intelligence, but the state of the art of artificial intelligence is machine learning approaches. But we can take these machine learning approaches that, by definition, allowing us to learn from the data itself rather than explicitly state exactly what to do next. And that's a real important breakthrough for us, especially in healthcare, because healthcare is so complex. And sometimes when we try to create the structured set of imperatives or rules or heuristics, there will always be edge cases and exceptions, and it becomes very difficult to construct and simulate a world like that. And so that's really what's exciting for us is that we have, my team and a number of the professionals here at Optum have this opportunity to work with this vast array of data in the hope that we will enable better outcomes and really allow people to work at their full license.
Love that, Sanjay. And so as we think about machine learning and AI in healthcare, these big data sets, what would you say is the opportunity? What could we do more of, or what can we do differently to get more value for outcomes and business?
Yeah, you know, we're very excited about the potential for AI. And I think if you read a lot of the press today, a lot of the really amazing work happening at academic institutions, at leading technology companies, a lot of it focuses on potentially using this data to support better clinical decision-making. Mm-hmm. And no doubt that will be a big portion of this story in the next 5 to 10 years. But right now, today, we have a great opportunity to look at some of the more mundane parts of our healthcare system, parts that are we commonly refer to as administrative processes or services, like claims adjudication, revenue cycle management, risk adjustment, and medical coding. These are important parts of our process in the U.S. to deliver appropriate and well-reimbursed healthcare, but they can be onerous and complex. And it's these areas that we've looked to see how we could apply some of the latest and greatest breakthroughs in artificial intelligence and deep learning to try to automate and reduce some of that complexity, free people up to work on the most complex cases, and try to automate and try to reduce the amount of manual work on things that are a little bit more repetitive than those administrative processes.
Yeah, it's about freeing people up to do more things of higher value.
That's exactly right. Our theory is that if we can allow people to spend the time on the most complex questions, whether it be administrative or clinical, that's going to be the best use of their capabilities and their skills. And the more we can leverage these approaches to prioritize their work, to automate key steps, automate approvals, or agree on reimbursement levels, that will free both payers and providers up and hopefully allow them to apply that to what are really problems that do need people to lead and understand and solve, something that machine learning approaches won't be able to do for us.
Yeah, I think it's such a great opportunity, Sanjay, and so much time and effort is being spent on these tasks that really doesn't contribute to overall outcomes. How do you believe you guys at Optum are using this technology differently than what's out there, or even better than how it's being used?
We're at the very front end of our journey, but we're really excited about some of the products and services that we've brought to market that we think are helping us take those first steps in healthcare. One of them is Optum 360 Case Advisor product, which automates the review of medical.
Which one is that, Sanjay? Sorry, I missed it. Optum what?
Optum 360 Case Advisor.
Okay. Okay. Interesting. Uh-huh.
Yeah. And it allows us to automate the review of medical charts so we can help providers decide which charts are the most complex that require a third-party physician review. In the past, we put that burden on either case managers or folks working on the floors to decide how to route that to a third-party physician for an independent attestation. Now we can take all the charts, review them all, and then determine which of the ones are that really do require a physician to read and review. It just optimizes both the workflow for the folks on the floor in those hospital systems, as well as focuses our third-party physicians on the right cases to focus on. Now, that would have been very hard to do if we tried to construct a complex set of rules to govern that. But what we did was that we trained a deep learning model to identify those charts based on what our physicians had already reviewed in the past. So it learned from those decisions. And by training the model on past decisions, we not only can get a great deal of accuracy on which charts should be reviewed, we don't miss many of them. And more importantly, as criteria change, as guidelines change, as practice changes, we can continue to learn from those decisions, and the model will essentially update itself to reflect that changing decision space.
I think that's super interesting.
Yeah, and that, you know, we're excited. One of the things that, coming from a tech background, some might hear this with a tech background and say, hey, you know, that's something I could do very quickly and easily using, you know, amazing tools from Google and Facebook like TensorFlow and PyTorch. And that's definitely the case. But the one thing I've learned in healthcare is that we do have an important responsibility to make sure we're getting things right, whether they be administrative or clinical. We're constantly working with important patient data, some of it identifiable. These are important decisions that affect reimbursement and how that gets reflected in your overall healthcare spending. And so oftentimes we just need to be very deliberate in how we test and evaluate solutions. So I think that's something that, coming from outside of a healthcare background for many years, something I really have gained a greater appreciation on is that some of these changes may feel like they're not moving as quickly as we'd like to. But we've got a lot on the line here. This is not about getting a catalog selection or adding a photo in an Instagram post, right? Like, there's a level of inaccuracy you can handle there. Here we have some very important decisions that we want to ensure we're getting right. And so it requires a lot of thoughtfulness and planfulness to do that. But I'm excited because I think now that we've demonstrated this capability in some of our products, we're hoping to scale that up quickly and safely across the enterprise.
Yeah, no, I think you're bringing up some great points, Sanji, that healthcare complexity and the spillover effects when you're talking about people's lives and outcomes. So is the intention to have these systems be used to grow the Optum business internally and kind of help be more efficient and better at what is being done? Or is the intention also to maybe eventually offer these systems and technologies to your customers so they could also benefit from them?
It's both. I think because we serve so many portions of the healthcare system, we oftentimes act on behalf of important entities, other payers and providers. So gotcha. We can enable our internal processes, but also, like with Case Advisor and other tools, we're embedding them in our products and services that customers use every day. So it's a little bit of both.
Love it. I love that. You're able to improve the business efficiency internally and then also help your stakeholders get better as well.
Yeah, no, we're excited. I think every day we're working towards pursuing new applications of this technology. At the same point, as you're probably super well aware of, breakthroughs that are happening around machine learning and artificial intelligence coming out almost every day. And so we're excited to take advantage of all this great investment, all this great work, both in academic institutions and by our peer companies, to see how we can apply this in new and novel ways across our business.
Yeah, no, it's a must. And for those listening, thinking about how they can start applying some of these technologies that don't have a data science team or don't really know where to begin, I mean, what kind of advice would you give them?
We're always there to help. I've got to say that right up front, either myself or partners across Optum, as we embed these tools into our products and services, hopefully more people will be able to take advantage of it. That being said, if you're getting started, it can feel overwhelming. There are a couple of things I would think about with regard to where to begin. We've built some tools that are styled off of the business model canvas that help us think about how to solve a problem and take advantage of AI when we solve it. And some of the aspects that we focus on are, you know, getting your use case right. What do you want to accomplish? How is it accomplished today? How do you want to improve it? What problem are you solving? Another important question is to understand what data you have. What is the information that you're going to use to train a machine learning model? And with that data, there's a very important question. For lack of a better term, to oversimplify it a little bit, the question is, if you have a piece of information like a claim or a chart or a lab report, do you have the answer you want? Do you have a record of what someone did or what you'd like to be the right answer if a model is presented with that information? That's a really important question. And one where we answer it often, we realize we have lots of right answers. Often in data science terms, it's called labels. Labels might represent what a medical professional did when they try to rework a claim to get to the appropriate reimbursement amount. It might be the decision of a physician to authorize or approve a procedure or a reimbursement. These are all sort of the right answers that we can learn from. And so when you look at your business, you should find what sort of data you have and what sort of answers you have. Now, that's not to say that if you don't have those answers, you can't build machine learning models. But it does make it a little bit harder. It moves into a realm of what we call unsupervised learning that can be more difficult to predict, more difficult to maintain and support. And while it's not a showstopper, that's an important question for us. And then finally, the one thing I would also think about is, how much data do you have? How much data do you really have? Oftentimes, we think about very big stats. You have millions of records, millions of pieces of information. But for the problem you're solving, you have to ask yourself, how much data do you have to answer that question? This comes up quite a bit. I mentioned earlier that we have over 200 million patient lives of data. But when you start whittling down, say, conditions or geographies, data sets can get very small very quickly. And so having a large set of data is really important. Again, not a showstopper, but it makes things a lot easier.
No, there's some great highlights here, Sanjee, for anybody wanting to head in this direction. You've provided a great framework. What are you most proud of in business accomplishments and in your career as it relates to AI and healthcare?
I'm really excited that we spent about 3 years at Optum Labs, an R&D center, as you mentioned at the beginning of the podcast, really trying to understand some of the breakthroughs in AI, like deep learning, and how it might impact our business. We then went through a real thoughtful process of testing and failing and testing different ideas and concepts and how we could apply these new technologies that ultimately resulted in products like Optum 360 Case Advisor. And what I'm really excited now is that because of those early successes, because of those early failures, we're now at a point where we have enough information and understanding to say, this is something we're ready to scale. And the challenge that's been placed on us right now is, how do we scale artificial intelligence solutions across our healthcare business? How do we take on bigger problems, bigger ideas, and enable more of our business with this technology? And so that's what I'm really excited about. And that's what gets me up in the morning a little bit, get my team up in the morning. And it's built on those early efforts and investments and failures, but really excited to see that we're moving to the next stage of our AI journey.
I mean, it really shows the commitment of Optum to take this technology and leverage it to make business and outcomes better. 3 full years of just sort of sandbox figuring things out. And now you guys walked out of that with some really good ideas and are starting to put it into action.
Yeah, I'm really excited. Optum's always had a big commitment to innovation from our most senior level of leadership. And so, but you know, with that commitment requires patience. And I'm happy to say, I think at least with regard to AI, that patience has really paid off for Optum.
Love it. Now, it's a great view into the culture and the innovative character of you and the leaders there. What would you say is one of the biggest setbacks you experienced during those 3 years? And what was the key learning?
If I think about it, we failed a lot. And overall, I don't think any one setback defined what we did. What I'm getting at is, like, when you are working with more innovative, more risky, more speculative ideas and technologies, you have to be ready for failure. Like, we tried tons of stuff. Some of it worked and a lot of it didn't. As we're talking, I'm just reminded, when we first started trying to interpret a medical text, we used a great library that Facebook had trained on the English language to understand sentiment from a call pass text. And we were like, oh, that's definitely going to work on our medical text. And it totally, actually, it didn't completely fail. It didn't perform as well as we had hoped. Yeah. And when we looked at the text itself, it was so different from what pass text was trained on that we had to train our own model to take into account such the vast variation in the medical shorthand you see in EMR medical notes. And so those, I don't see as setbacks, but almost like you have to have in your DNA the ability to structure your work like experiment.
Yeah.
And like a scientist, almost assume they fail, you know, assume failure until it is proven successful. And that's just a little bit of attitude and culture to be okay with the fact that not everything's going to work out, but you're going through a systematic, almost a method that's almost rooted in the scientific method where you're systematically trying new things. And at some point, you have to be okay to stop that hypothesis is really just not going to work out. But that's probably the biggest takeaway from my time at Optum Labs.
Yeah, you know, Sanji, and that's the word that kept coming up in my mind when you were sharing that as scientist. Like, it's a scientific method, right? You got failure is in the fabric of the duty.
Absolutely, yeah. And I will say that wasn't readily apparent for me, at least, coming into this role 5 years ago and really rethinking how to think about success and failure. That if you treat those very first steps as experiments and you evaluate the results, I think over a longer period of time, you'll get greater success because then you'll have better information to know how to proceed and how to proceed correctly. So that was a big learning for me over the last 5 years.
I think it's great and a great framework to put around this effort of integrating AI and deep learning, machine learning into these very complex and very niched efforts. I was talking to a guest not too long ago that shared about how they wanted to come up with a CRM for pharma companies to engage patients. And they shared that their initial attempt was to build upon an existing CRM and how that failed miserably. But it really taught them a lot about the importance of customization, but then being able to scale. And now they're able to appreciate all the nuances, kind of like you are, right? With trying to use this Facebook algorithm, having to retrain it because of all the shorthand. I mean, it's really, really neat to hear your experience in that particular experiment.
Yeah, no. And it sounds like they have the same learning too. I think, you know, we're all learning a lot about how to think about innovation differently. And, you know, credit where credit's due. Like, I think a lot of this thinking has been pioneered with startups in Silicon Valley, but it's very applicable inside of large organizations like ours and others as we try to innovate at the same pace as some of those new companies.
For sure. What would you say, Sanji, is one of your most proud accomplishments thus far?
I think we're pretty excited about Case Advisor, just to bring it back to that. I think being, from what we could tell, we were one of the first, if not the first, to market with a revenue cycle management product that used deep learning. I think we established the value and benefit to the business. While I think some very smart people could see the promise of AI, given how much they invested in Optum Labs, until you actually deliver a product into market, there's always going to be a question like, is this really relevant? Are we following the right path, or are we in sort of quote unquote a dry hole? And so that's what we're really excited about. I think that allowed us to now think about greater investment, think about different products and services that can be enabled with AI and how to expand that. But it doesn't happen without that first success.
Love it. It's a great, great call out. And what would you say is the thing that you're most excited about today?
I think there's a lot to be excited about. But as I think about the future of artificial intelligence and how it can change healthcare, I think I'm really excited about the possibility of getting to AI that can help with clinical decision support. We are not there yet, but we might be there, you know, even this morning. There's so many people working towards overcoming what is essentially the biggest challenge with using some of these breakthroughs like deep learning, which is getting to real interpretability. Sometimes we call it the black box problem. If you really want to be able to recommend a course of clinical care for someone, you've got to explain why. And that reflects that sort of answering the question of why the recommendation is being made is is often referred to broadly as a set of approaches called causal methods. We're trying to understand the causality for a problem or data state. And when I look out forward, I see amazing investments and breakthroughs happening at companies, as I mentioned, like Google and Facebook, academic institutions like MIT and Stanford, where researchers and data scientists and engineers are trying to figure out how to get to true causality. Once we get there, I think we will be more comfortable. I think physicians and clinicians and nurse practitioners and all those folks who are really the most important part of our healthcare system, people who are actually caring for you and me, they'll be more confident that the recommendations we're making are understandable, are comprehensive and safe and trustworthy. But I think that requires a lot of work from all of us to explore and continue to innovate. We're not there yet, but given all the work that's happening across the industry, I'm confident that we'll see some breakthroughs. And over time, with a lot of time and effort and testing and validation, we might be able to apply that to a clinical setting.
Love it. Love that view, that horizon viewing into the future. It's definitely promising to be able to lift the hood on that outcome of the decision and understand causality. So if you could have lunch or coffee or tea with anybody, who would it be?
Yeah, you know, one of the folks that I've been a little bit inspired by and love to lunch with is a guy by the name of Charlie Munger, who I didn't know a lot about. He is Warren Buffett's sort of best friend, partner in Berkshire Hathaway. And he's got an amazing perspective on business and investment, where he looks at, he's constantly testing himself to understand what is the framework that describes a complex problem or problem space. And he's got a book that's out of print, but it's full of his speeches and thinking about how to think about problems, called Charlie Munger's Almanac. And
I actually have it.
Perspectives on it. Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I have it on my shelf.
Yeah,
I'm looking at it. I'm like, oh my God, I got to pull that thing down. I haven't looked at it in a while. But please, so why should we take a look at it, Sanji? Like, tell us a little bit more, because I was really intrigued when I learned about Charlie, the man behind the man. I mean, such an interesting guy.
Yeah, you know, I'm fascinated by it too. He studies all sorts of areas of academic study and theory and practice, looking for different ways, different frameworks to solve problems, whether it be behavioral science, be economics. What is the framework that defines a two-sided marketplace like eBay versus what is the framework that drives behavioral economics and some of the trends and patterning? And what's amazing is that there are all these different ways to look at problems from many different diverse disciplines. And you'll never know what problem you have in front of you. But if you have this sort of set of frameworks to think about the problem and draw on these frameworks that have been established, that seems like a good way to get started in solving really complex problems. And so that's what I love about reading about him and different mental models on how to approach problems.
That's pretty cool.
And think about them differently. Yeah.
That's pretty cool. So would that be the book you recommend, or would it be a different one?
No, I probably recommend that book. You know,
yeah.
I think it's
Poor Charlie's Almanac.
Yeah, Poor Charlie's Almanac.
Not so
it's
poor.
A good read. Yeah. And there's a bit of a shortcut. I think there's a blog called Farnham Street. The host there is a real big fan of Charlie Munger. And he's got a little bit of a crib sheet, like 100 mental models, that is sort of his version of an almanac.
So really?
If you don't want to have to, maybe you can't even find Poor Charlie's Almanac. I know it's been a little tricky to find in publication, but that might be also a great place to start if you're interested in mental models.
Yeah, I've heard of it. A friend of mine listens to it, is a fan of, I think it's Shane, right? Farnham?
Yeah.
Yeah, Farnham Street. So there you go, folks. There's a digital version of Poor Charlie's Almanac, and then also try looking it up. Might be out of print, but you might get lucky and find a copy out there for resale. Sanji, great, great recommendations. And that's a first too, by the way, for no one's recommended that one before.
Oh, thanks.
So what's the best advice you ever received?
I can't begin to think about, there's so much great advice I've gotten over the years. I think one thing that in my life right now that's important for me is really thinking about time and time management. I had a talk that told me, look, it's really important to have time to think about really hard problems. And you've got to prioritize that in your calendar and your life, especially given the nature of the types of things I've been gravitated to doing and like to do. I think it's the case for anyone, is that sometimes we can fill our calendar from 9 to 5 with meetings and commitments and things to do. But if you don't prioritize that time to think about hard problems, apply some of that thoughtfulness and time to plan, that's so important. And the point of my career right now, I'm trying to balance that with all the commitments of supporting lots of folks and also spending a great time with my family and making sure I balance things out. But I think time management, I think it's a great quote. I think it might have been Warren Buffett maybe who said it, no amount of money in the world will buy you another second.
I love that. That is great advice. And thinking through those hard problems, you really do have to take a step back. And so appreciate that call to action for the listeners, Sanji. Before we conclude, by the way, this has been fun. I really have enjoyed both getting to know you better, Sanji, and learning about your philosophy around AI and applying it to healthcare. But I'd love to have you share a closing thought with the listeners, and then where can they continue the conversation with you or follow the work you're doing at Optum?
Yeah, one closing thought I have is, as listeners, as folks who want to make a difference in healthcare, I know there's a lot of hype around AI, and there'll be a lot of failed promises, as I think we've all seen those Gartner curves of hype, and I don't know if we're at the top of it, but at some point we'll be at the downside of this. AI has gone through waves of success and failure. And I have no doubt history may repeat itself. But I think if we could get through some of those cycles, I think we can make meaningful change with artificial intelligence. I think that's on all of us to understand these methods, understand what's possible. I hope someday that we're all experts in artificial intelligence, machine learning, confusion mistresses, And I say that because I think then at that point we'll be making a material impact with AI. But it's not going to be without failure. It's not going to be without down cycles, and hopefully we'll see through that and get to a place where we've made a material impact on healthcare. And if anyone wants to get in touch with me, I'm on Twitter and LinkedIn, and my email address is sanji.fernando@optum.com.
Outstanding. Sanji, thanks again. This has really been a true pleasure, and excited to see what you guys do with the work you work so hard at Optum Labs to figure out, and the work with the Optum 360 Case Advisor and beyond. So really appreciate the time you spent with us today.
No, thank you. It was great meeting you. I look forward to catching up soon.
Thanks for listening to the Outcomes Rocket Podcast.
Be sure to visit us on the web at www.outcomesrocket.com for the show notes, resources, inspiration, and so much more.